You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. Now a story about what we spend and owe on a global scale. The word sanctions gets tossed around a lot. It's an international punishment, the go-to way to isolate and starve a bad actor using money. This week, the U.S. and the EU tighten the screws on Russia with even more sanctions. So how do these things work anyway? To find out, we met up with an economist outside the United Nations.
I am Cheryl King. I am the Senior Director of Research for Rubini Global Economics.
We're standing outside the UN because we are thinking and talking about international pressure, international economic pressure. And I think the first question a lot of Americans have is, do sanctions actually work? Do they do anything?
There do seem to be a lot of them going around right now.
Yeah.
You know, rather interestingly, the methodology that the U.S. and the European Union have been deploying more recently probably have a better chance of having an impact now than they have in the future, because they're not just saying we're not going to trade in certain goods. We're going to hit you more where it really hurts.
The test case when we are thinking probably about Russia, I guess, is Iran here. That is sort of the thing that the international community has looked at in the past few years. And the Obama administration would make the argument, hey, these economic sanctions maybe brought Iran to the negotiating table. Can we measure the effect that sanctions on Iran had?
Well, as an economist, I would say that it would be easier to do it if they were just doing it through trade flows, because it's a lot easier to measure in that respect. And in that respect, they're pretty minimal in terms of the impact on the U.S. economy.
But for Iran, they're big.
And, you know, the idea is that it's going to hurt them more than it's going to hurt us.
When you look at Russia, we're talking about a great big economy and one where they have a lot of oil and gas. They trade certainly with a lot of European countries, sell oil and gas to them. That's the one place where we're not seeing great big sanctions. So is it possible to know if these sanctions are going to make a dent and if Vladimir Putin or your regular Russian family is going to feel it?
That's the big unknown right now. Right now, the way that we're thinking about it is Russia doesn't have a lot of clients, and the EU doesn't have a lot of other sources of gas. So going to that step would be the equivalent of nuclear assured destruction. It would be a very big negative for both of them. And that's why we think that it's not going to go that far.
That they wouldn't say, all right, fine, your oil and gas, we're cutting them off.
That's right. And even if they do shut off the gas, from the analysis that we've done, it suggests that if it's brief, it is not going to have a material impact on EU GDP numbers.
So when you think about sanctions, then, what kind of a tool are they? Are they blunt? Are they precise? Are they a useful weapon?
Well, I think that they're all relatively blunt. But, you know, I think that you have to think about it in the manner of turning up the screws. And that's basically what the administrations within D.C. and what's going on within the EU as well. I mean, and other countries as well, obviously, that as they continue to resist what the will is in terms of their behavior towards the Ukraine, in terms of what the rest of the world feels that it should happen, that there is an agenda of increasingly more punitive steps that they can take.
There are a lot of big international companies and American companies that do business in Russia or with Russian partners. So, for example, ExxonMobil drills with Rosneft, or you have Ford that does deals there as well. Do you think we'll start to see kind of follow-on effects on those companies from these sanctions?
Yeah, it's definitely possible that it would spill over into other areas, because Russia is perfectly willing to go tit for tat as well. We're definitely seeing that they've turned up the rhetoric on them, and I think that will be difficult. And we're already thinking that what's been imposed already could take a couple of tenths off of Eurozone GDP. And considering that the economy's not doing very well to begin with right now, it's activity that they really can't afford to lose right now.
Yeah, things are not so hot in Europe. They weathered a crisis, but they're still very high.
Well, they're weathering a crisis.
Weathering a crisis. There's still very high unemployment in Europe. Yep. You have a lot of young people who aren't working. Mm-hmm. This, I think, is probably a little tougher for the EU to stomach than it is for us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Even within the euro area, which includes the UK, you could see that the areas that were arguing for a certain type of sanction were the ones that were less exposed to that type of activity. So, for example, the UK wanted to see more trade sanctions, and the eurozone wanted to see more financial sanctions, because the UK obviously has more financial ties with Russia than the rest of the eurozone does.
Cheryl King from Rubini Global Economics, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And that brings us to the weekend number. Our number is 100. That's the percentage of debt the Bank of Moscow holds in dollars, according to senior U.S. officials. What does that mean? Well, according to those same officials, it means that the bank and others like it will have a tough, if not impossible, time getting mid-range or long-term debt financing.